The world has watched in horror as millions of Syrians continue to live under siege. New figures released this week suggest that 52 areas are blockaded, almost all by regime troops. There was public outcry last year when images of starving children in Madeira haunted our screens, prompting an outpouring of support for those affected. But the aid money being sent to Syrians through organs like the UN is the object of a new investigation by The Guardian. Emma Bills is one of the authors.
It really piqued my interest, particularly was when the situation with the sieges became so desperate, and it sort of gathered so much more attention by the beginning of this year. And a lot of those sieges had been going on for a very, very long time. So a lot of my interest sort of began from there, sort of trying to understand what was happening with regard to the way that the aid provision was reaching those people who are really in need.
In the damning report, tens of millions worth of contracts are believed to have been awarded to people close to the Assad regime under the UN Syria aid program. Yet for journalists, mounting such a critical investigation is not without pitfalls.
It's really complicated with a story like this because obviously you don't want to criticize anybody who is you know, putting their life at risk to do the work that they do. The aid effort in Syria is absolutely crucially important to so many people. So at various times throughout the conflict, there's been stories that come up and you look into them, and then you sort of have to do an equation, an ethical equation, well, I certainly have, about whether you're going to hurt anyone in doing that, or whether it's actually the public good of telling the story overcomes any other of the issues.
It's an ethical dilemma that many journalists face. How do you tell the truth without destroying lives? Yet up until now, the main challenge facing media professionals has been to even get inside Syria, as the security situation remains dire. Emma Suleiman is a communication specialist who works with advocacy groups inside Damascus.
Before the Syrian war, the media industry in Syria was fully under the control of the regime, and no one would dare from inside Syria to speak against the regime narrative. And after the uprising, the international media had to rely on activists for information without the possibility to double-check the info. Then, you know, the journalists who could go to Syria legally were escorted by the regime and had to stick to the regime's version of the story in order to be granted a visa for a second time. Other journalists who used to cover opposition area had to go illegally, and as if ISIS and Qaeda appearance were risking being kidnapped or killed by them, so they totally stopped going into Syria and information were kept unverified.
So how did Emma Bills manage to dig up the dirt?
What was interesting about this was it was several people doing research independently that came together at a certain point and kind of merged.
It took months of research to produce the investigation, which questions the UN's entanglement with the Assad regime.
Because the conflict's been going on for a while now, there has started to be a body of publicly available information building up. So we went through details of procurement contracts, old annual reports and accounts, project plans, and the financial tracking services that the UN OCHA puts available online. So it was a matter of going through all of those, and then obviously they don't tell you very much. So then there was another process, which was going through each of those pieces of information and then investigating that through various means as well to get to the point where we had that sort of level of detail. And then some of it wasn't necessarily available, so it would be going and asking people, talking to people, and then coming back to it with a slightly different view, having got some information from somebody who's either working in the area or who has been, you know, looking into the business communities in that area.
The investigation has been warmly welcomed by the aid community and Syrians such as Emma Suleiman. She says for the first time, outlets like The Guardian have been courageous enough to reveal secret information.
The issue I faced in working on the Syrian war with multiple non-profits was the lack of interest of the media to cover specific regime crimes or successful democratic experience within the opposition area. Versus their coverage to ISIS and all the jihadi crimes, since we know these are more, you know, more sexier subjects and they attract more audience.
But on Tuesday, The Guardian broke with the mould and headline with this provocative title, "The UN Pays Millions to the Assad Regime." Within hours of its publication, it went viral. For Middle East expert Salman Sheikh, it was one of the most significant Guardian front pages in the past 5 years, even if it did have to share the spotlight with an obituary on comic actor Gene Wilder.
Well, of course, Daesh and the Islamic State and even Al-Qaeda and just the whole question of terrorism has been front and center of our pages and the coverage on Syria. There's been, in fact, very little coverage in terms of the civilian casualties which have been created not just by the terrorists, the evil terrorism that we've seen in Syria and across its borders, but that's been done by the Assad regime and increasingly by the Russians as well. More than 90% of civilian deaths in any given month in Syria are probably perpetrated by the Assad regime and its backers. With regard to this humanitarian story, I think there's been a growing weight of evidence.
A point of view shared by Nadeem Houri, Deputy Middle East and North Africa Director at Human Rights Watch.
It's been an issue of concern for us for some time. I mean, we had heard from many aid workers in the UN and also in NGOs working in Damascus that the regime in Damascus was ensuring that all aid gets funneled through channels that it favored. And some of these channels are obviously either regime-controlled or controlled by people very close to the regime.
Pressure is now growing for the UN to launch an independent inquiry into its Syria aid program. Salman Sheikh used to work for the organization.
I worked under Secretary General Kofi Annan, and he was forced in March 1999, for example, to launch an investigation, an independent inquiry into the Rwandan genocide. And again, when there were allegations of wrongdoing in the Oil for Food program in Iraq, he was forced to do that in 2004. Now, I note in Iraq in particular, the UN played an important role after the fall of Saddam Hussein, and was able to play a role there, both in terms of the political side and in terms of the reconstruction and the humanitarian side. So at a minimum, this Secretary General needs to reestablish trust and confidence of the Syrian people.
But Nadeem Houri says it will be tough restoring trust.
I think this has affected the reputation of the UN inside Syria. We've heard from many people living in opposition-controlled areas that they don't trust the UN because they see UNA being delivered by local groups that they know are very close to the regime.
Operating in Syria with a conflict now in its sixth year forces humanitarians to make difficult choices, a UN spokesman said in response to the investigation. However, for Nadeem Houri, cooperating with the Assad regime is too high a price to pay.
While access is a key issue, you cannot give away the principle. Not just because principles are important, but because the same Syrian government that the UN is relying on is the one that is blocking aid from other places. What could they have done differently? I think more transparency, but also more political backing from the UN member states to put pressure on the UN to speak up more forcefully and to advocate more efficiently. There are no easy answers. But I think when it comes to aid in Syria, more could have been done earlier and with more political backing.
What would Human Rights Watch in the UN's position have done?
Look, we're not an aid organization, but if we were in that position, you know, we as a human rights organization put principle first. So if there's going to if the only way to deliver aid is to go through a regime-controlled entity, then I think we would expose that and say, if this is the only option, we probably would not do it. I mean, but this is not our field of expertise. But I think alarm bells should have been raised that, for example, the blood bank is being controlled by the Ministry of Defense. There should have been more discussion that some of the key organizations that were delivering were controlled by proxies of the regime who were known to be not only corrupt, but also supporting financially the regime. I mean, it's ironic if you get to a situation where you have to fund aid, and by funding aid, you also end up funding the wartime effort. It just becomes vicious.
The investigation has sparked public debate about the UN's role inside Syria. And what does Emma Bills make of all of this flurry of reaction?
The aim is certainly not to criticise the UN or individual humanitarian workers, because obviously, you know, I absolutely understand this, on a very personal level how difficult working in Syria is and what amazing work people do all over Syria every single day. So it's not about trying to
launch a witch hunt or anything against the UN.
Yeah, but to make sure that that work is doing the best that it possibly can, and that the people who really need that aid are getting it in the right way, and that we are doing the people that contribute through our governments and through ourselves to these kind of relief efforts, that relief is being used in an appropriate way and in the most effective way to help the most people.
Having people talk about what the UN does inside Syria will enable journalists like Emma to hold institutions to account and will allow citizens to know how their money is being used and why. You've been listening to International Media This Week with me, Christina Okello. Thank you to my guests, Emma Beals, Emma Suleiman, Salman Sheikh and Nadim Houri. And most of all, thank you to you for listening. Until next time, stay tuned to RFI.